National Radio Club.
Lady Xers, welcome to Market Scope for September 2008. We continue up the AM dial in Arkansas with Paul Burkhardt, starting this month with 1,210 kilocycles.
Nothing at 1210, 1220 is some jumble here. Here is 1230, hundreds of stations here in the Midwest. 1250 is the Rhythm and Blues station from Little Rock, which is simulcast with Power 92.3. And I don't know what the call letters are of the AM station. I think it's KCL something in Little Rock. Here is 1270. Okay, 1280, a lot of jumble here. Here are several stations unidentified on 1290. Here is 1300. At 1330 could be from KFH in Wichita, Kansas. The world famous 1340, like all the other graveyard frequencies. Nothing really particularly discernible. Here is 1350. 1360.
He's in a real big thick lake. Watching him over the years, Keo, and now you...
1370 was nothing to really recognize, but 1380 is ESPN affiliate in Little Rock, KDXE 1380.
He's gonna do whatever it takes to prepare, and I think that's what makes him the competitor that he is, and everybody feeds off of that.
Eagles linebacker Tikio Spikes with us on game night on ESPN Radio. Eagles come up with a big victory over Dallas, 10-6. There have been reports, but one specifically before the game, that Donovan McNabb has started to accept the fact that he's.
Some country station at 1390. Okay, 1400, the usual. 1410, nothing really of recognition. 1420, nothing really. 1430 is nothing, but 1440 is a Spanish station here in Little Rock. I still do not know the call letters of that station. 1460 is nothing. No matter how much I turn the radio, I don't get anything really. 1480. Now that must be a Spanish station here. Here is 1490.
Person who has performed thousands of operations on athletes, pro, and discuss things with him on the.
Okay, here is 1500, which is KSTP in St. Paul, Minnesota.
And what lies ahead next month and the month after that. Then at midnight, Jester, in the third hour, something a little bit different. Joe Francis, Bill John Wyatt, has walked up in Reno, Nevada, via Panama City, Florida. We're going to have on live Joe Francis from a prison cell near Reno, Nevada. But until then, Jester Thompson, Timothy Frank, and world renowned.
Here's 1510 WLAC Nashville. Okay, here's 1530. XCRF, or if it's not that, somebody can tell me what that call sign is from Mexico at 1570. Here is 1580 now. Now up to the expanded band.
Again, the sites were www.ar.audubon.org and www.fishcreek.org. Or feel free to call us at 501-244-2229. That's 501-244-2229. This content provided by Audubon Arkansas, State Office of the National Audubon Society. Audubon Arkansas works throughout the state on restoration and protection of watersheds and other important habitats. We strive to increase citizen involvement in...
This is 1620, a continuous loop about the Audubon Society.
We are in the planning process for building...
Up to 1640, which is WTNI in Biloxi, Mississippi.
As he comes out and explains it.
1650, up to 1700. Okay, there you have it, folks.
Thanks, Paul. Remember, if you'd like to do a market scope of your hometown or wherever you travel, send it to me, Phil Wayne, at 313 Spring Street, Upper Sandusky, Ohio, 43351, 1652. There are hundreds of DX Audio Service members out there who would be most grateful. I'll be back next month with more air checks, but now, here's Fred with the musings from the members.
WXYZ 1270 Detroit, time to play Cash Call.
Hello, Fred, this is Ernie. I'm listening to the DX Audio for August of 08. And your question about share time, I have to ask you if 1240 in the city of Chicago is still a share time frequency, because I remember the reason why you had it is because no one station could cover the whole area. So you had three, and of course I also remember the fact of ethnicity, so is that still the way they do things on 1240 in Chicago? Away from that, I guess I'll have to guess of other shared time stations if they're still in existence. Take care. This is early New York City. Bye-bye.
Hello, fellow DXers. Wayne Ryan in Brantford, Ontario. We could go Tuesday, which would be July the 8th, in the afternoon, CJBQ Belleville on 800 came up, and pretty well pushed CKLW Windsor back, which normally I would get, and they were playing a lot of the good country classics, and I phoned them the next day to thank them for it, and they said that on weekends they do even more. I haven't been able to get them again since, and I certainly do wish that I could. I'm very familiar with that Baltimore station on 1300 that Victor Schmidt mentioned to me. Thank you, but this was on 1310 that I was talking about. And, of course, the Orioles games have gone to an FM station in Baltimore, and the Team 980 in Washington is still carrying them, too, as far as that goes. I understand that Rick Foley just got hired back by the Chicago Blackhawks. He had broadcast their games before. The station in Rochester, New York, that was mentioned on the last tape, WRCI, as their colors are now, they've also changed format. They are now religious. That's another station you might see has done just about everything.
Hi, Bill Alasaskis in Milford, Pennsylvania. A little bit of news here. We have a change over at 970 in Hackensack, New Jersey. No longer WWDJ, now WNYM, as in mother. And they switched over to the Dennis Prager and Mike Gallagher type situation, all talk. That's about the size of that one. And my question is, where is the 50,000 watts going? Because there's no change in signal here. Also, I wonder if anybody else has heard anything about that station in Milford. I surely haven't. Thank you. Talk to you later.
This is Rusty Curry in Eugene, Oregon. First item, KNRO 1670 Redding, California has changed formats. They were sports. Now they are adult album alternative, which is an unusual format for AM. So it should stick out a little bit more and be easier to spot if it pops up in your location. They are simulcasting KPIG 1510 from the Bay Area. There is a little network of pig radio stations around California now. Also, in a related item, KGA has a CP to downgrade to 15 kilowatts in order to let KPIG improve their nighttime signal. So it's kind of a whoa-whoa scenario, basically. Hasn't seemed to have happened yet. I also have a question. Let's say you have a highly directional antenna array, 7 or 8 towers, and you take readings of the signal all the way around, average them out. How does that compare to a 1-tower non-directional type signal? How much signal do you lose in terms of dBs, for instance, if any? That's all for now. Good DX, everyone.
Ken Honestchuk, Sports, Lockport, Illinois. On the internet, I just saw something. At a radio and records session in Austin, Texas, coming up September 9th and 10th, industry luminaries will be asked the question they'll be posed. And I'd like to hear the DX Audio Service members to get their comments on this. If you were the president of radio, what would you do during the first 100 days of your administration? Like to hear as many responses as possible. Thank you very much. Have a great time. Bye-bye.
Hi, this is Mike Lance in Miami Beach, Florida. We just had a format change, not Miami, but in the Titusville area, which is near Orlando. 1060 WIXC, WIXC, has gone from sports to classic country. WIXC 1060 is now classic country. And I believe their core letters are WIXC or WIXY. Also, one other quick thing, 880 in the South Florida area is still testing. They test during the day, but they don't give any information whatsoever. They just have a dead carrier. That's the latest. See you all at the convention. Looking forward to it.
It's Mark Marino from Crystal Lake, Illinois. Well, just wanted to let you know that I was having a little trouble receiving IBOC. Well, it's like a select antenna against the AM antenna. Well, it's a power antenna, but even without the power adapter plugged in, it seems to work better. And I put the select antenna against that and fine-tune it, and it brings the signal in good enough that I can get at least 3 stations here real steady with IBOC. And I can even get WLS here with IBOC. It's not as easy to do, but I can do it with the select antenna. So I thought that might be a good tip for those of you out there. The other thing I've noticed, and the score, or 670, turns off their IBOC during the White Sox games. Why that would be, I do not know. But if anybody else knows, I'd sure like to know.
Hello, everyone. This is Joe Schwab from Richmond, Virginia, and I wanted to bring you up today on a couple of developments. Starting Monday of this week, I must in the morning begin broadcasting on WLEE on AM 990 here in town. Also, WLEE continues with its audio feed of CNN news programming, the same format it's been using for the last year or two. On the weekends, they have some lifestyle talk from Business Talk Radio And they have the money talk show with Bob Brinker on Sunday afternoon from ABC and some religious programming on Sunday morning. Also up in the Washington area, I was noticing on Tuesday, and I don't know when this began happening, but noticing on Tuesday at 7:20 up in Alexandria, Virginia, began simulcasting its ESPN format with 980. They refer to themselves as ESPN 980, and they simulcast the same format with 7:20 a.m. and also the two FMs up in the greater Washington area. Apparently, there's been a buyout from the company that owns 7:20 buying 980 from Clear Channel. Have a good day and great DXNT and 73s, and we'll talk to y'all later.
And that is our musings to the members on this edition of the DX Audio Service. Remember, if you have something on your mind, something to say, give us a call today. And it can be a buy, sell, or trade item, or maybe some trading air checks or whatever. Give us a call on the musings, 360-469-0189, 24 hours a day for members only. That number also can be used to leave your comments about the DX Audio Service. Either bouquets or brickbats, either one, can be sent to that telephone number and not left on my personal voicemail. Keep in mind, though, we don't usually put comments about the magazine on the tape. We only put on stuff concerning DX, but you can leave your comments there if you so choose. On the 1240 issue, I'm probably not the best authority to answer this question because, to be frank with you, I haven't been keeping up as much as I should have, but I think that the three stations which were sharing time on 1240 are now down to only two. I think one of the stations bought out the other or something. Perhaps somebody from Chicago can weigh in and give us the straight scoop on that. But it's not because of a coverage issue as much as it's from a situation where you have two different owners, two different licensees wanting to use that frequency, so they have to share time. In fact, they're doing a lot of that with LPFM at the present time. When you have two different people in a community that want the same frequency, they have to share the frequency. And I'm sure if another frequency came open, that one of the stations would stay on 1240 while the other would move. But at the present time, they're best served by just sharing time. And as far as why they turn off the IBOC on the White Sox game, well, there's probably a couple different issues. The most predominant is the 7 to 10 second delay in digital encoding that IBOC uses. And that can be a big problem, especially if you carry your radio to the game, because just about the time you hear the crowd roar at the game, you're hearing the announcer on the on the radio side saying he's stepping up to the bat. So it's quite confusing. So a lot of times they drop the games into analog just to keep everything in real time. Another thing that I heard from my friends up in Detroit is that some of the stations are getting concerned that people are not being able to receive the games at distances. So it's kind of the situation that we've been talking about with the interference that IBOC has been causing is actually coming back to eat their own signal. So there's a couple different issues that IBOC poses, which is not necessarily in the best interest of the ball team nor the station. And that is our musings to the members. Well, if you haven't listened to anything on the DX Audio Service this month, we hope that you listen to this because it's a major policy change in your subscription to the DX Audio Service. Effective with this issue, we're making a change in the due date of your DX Audio Service. In the past, we've had the 10th of the month as the due date. This was based on the production of the DX Audio Service starting on the preceding 20th. And then usually being out the door within a week. Effective with this issue, the DX Audio Service tapes are not due until the last day of the month of the issue. Now, what this means is the September 2008 tape is not due to be in your possession until Tuesday, September the 30th. The October tape is not due to be in your possession until Friday, October the 31st, and so on. Normally, you should see your tapes at the beginning of the month. We're not going to be changing our production schedule, nor the way we mail tapes. And I think that traditionally, we've always had tapes to most of you by the 10th. However, there have been some times when we've had a delay in the mailing, and we're getting far too many requests for replacement tapes based on the 10th of the month date, and it's causing too many problems with volunteer time and expenses. Since the delays are outside of our control, the solution is simple. The tapes are not officially due to you until the end of the month. Please do not call if you have not received your tape by the 10th. Wait until the end of the month before contacting anyone, and we hope that you contact myself and not somebody else. Requests for replacements should be in writing, and telephone calls asking for replacements simply will not be honored. The Ultralight DXing Awards Committee is proud to announce a new and ongoing awards program for the Ultralight Medium Wave DXing community. The program is unique in several respects. First, it is the only awards program that is restricted to medium wave DXing accomplishments achieved with commonly available, inexpensive, entertainment-grade ultralight pocket radios. Secondly, the program is totally web-based. Applications for awards are accepted by email only, and award certificates that are suitable for framing are distributed to the recipients as printed digital image files. Thirdly, these certificates feature digitally remastered images of some of the most remarkable radio art from the first decade of broadcast radio. The comprehensive Ultralight DX Awards program features awards at various levels for stations heard, U.S. stations heard, Canadian provinces heard, Latin American stations heard, transatlantic stations heard, trans-Pacific stations heard, countries heard, and continents heard. In each category, when a DXer reaches beyond what is normally considered high achievement, special Master DXer certificates are awarded. For instance, in the Stations Heard category, certificates are available for stations heard at the 100, 200, 300, etc. station levels. At 500 stations heard on an ultralight receiver, an extraordinary achievement, a Master Ultralight DXers Award, is confirmed. A complete description of the Ultralight DX Awards programs is available for download from the Ultralight Files area at http://www.dxer.ca or direct from Rob Ross of the Awards Committee at the email address of VA3SW. That's VA3SW@rogers.com. If you have yet to experience the renewed thrill of DXing with an inexpensive ultralight receiver, we invite you to share your excitement and satisfaction that comes from success in Pocket Radio DX. Emphasizing DX skill and knowledge over equipment innovation, Ultralight Radio DXing brings special rewards in promotion to the special challenges and has restored the original thrill of AM DXing to many radio enthusiasts. The Ultralight Files area of DXER.ca has an extensive set of information and resources on the many aspects of ultralight radios and enthusiast activities. We hope that you'll accept the challenge, join the fun, and share the rewards. Signed, the Ultralight DX Awards Committee, Gary DeBrock, Rob Ross, and John Bryant. What's happening with DRM in the United States, by Jeff White. The author, by the way, is vice chairman of the USDRM Group and president of the National Association of Shortwave Broadcasters. The following was a report by the NASB summarizing the presentation given at the NASB USDRM Annual Conference in Cary, North Carolina. Dr. Donald Messer left the DRM consortium at the end of March. Some months earlier, he had relinquished his role as chairman of the technical committee of the DRM consortium. He is now actively involved in promoting Digital Radio Mondale in the United States. At the U.S. DRM annual meeting, May 8th, in Cary, North Carolina, he talked about some of the activities that he's been involved in during the past several months regarding DRM transmissions from the United States to the United States. Messer says there are two major elements involved in domestic DRM broadcasting in the United States. One is getting the Federal Communications Commission to approve domestic shortwave broadcasting, which is not permitted currently. Experimental testing is needed for this. The second element is building a constituency by doing developmental work to be able to convince the FCC that domestic DRM has value, including local content, etc. Thus, we are dealing with getting digital modulation approved in the HF broadcasting bands for domestic use. As far as medium wave is concerned, Messer agreed with those who have said that it has to be an analog DRM simulcast on adjacent channels. You can't disturb the analog transmissions, he stated. He noted that very successful simulcast DRM medium wave tests have been conducted in Mexico, Brazil, and India. Messer explained that DRM Plus includes all the digital broadcast bands above 30 MHz and below 108 MHz. He insists that, quote, there is some activity, although very limited, in the United States with regard to trying to get experimental licenses for DRM Plus, unquote. What about shortwave? But shortwave is where most of the activity is with DRM in the United States. Messer divides this into three categories. Local coverage on 26 MHz, regional coverage, and traditional shortwave broadcasting for long-distance coverage. On 26 MHz, Messer says that transmitters of 200 watts or less can provide local community radio services. He noted 26 MHz is a natural alternative for the Federal Communications Commission, given the controversy about using channels within part of the existing FM band for low-power FM community radio stations. Using DRM on 26 MHz would reduce the political pressure that the Federal Communications Commission is receiving from both sides, the National Association of Broadcasters on one, and, for example, universities and religious organizations on the other. These low-power DRM stations would cover 10 to 100 square miles. Messer says at least three organizations are working with him on developing DRM tests on 26 MHz for local coverage, but no experimental licenses have been issued as of yet. The second category of DRM on shortwave is a medium-wave regional service. Messer explained that he has been working with a group that has filed an application for at least 2 years of experimental operation in Alaska. And the Federal Communications Commission has recently accepted that application for evaluation. Quote, Alaska is roughly twice the size of Texas, unquote, said Messer. Quote, you are talking about a fairly large regional coverage, unquote. The plan is to use 10 or maybe 20 kilohertz DRM signals with up to four languages of audio to cover the entire state using old 100 kilowatt Defense Department transmitters near Fairbanks, says Messer. The Cold War ended, so the transmitters are up there and they're not being used, unquote. He says he's working with a company located near Fairbanks that would eventually like to provide a digital audio service throughout the state of Alaska. Does he think the project will be approved? My guess is that the Federal Communications Commission's evaluators will approve this application sometime before the end of the year, when the cold sets in and the sun doesn't rise anymore. We will have the antenna field constructed in accordance with a very good antenna design. Then, starting next year, when the snow goes away, we'll start experimental broadcasting, unquote. Messer cites two key reasons why he thinks the Federal Communications Commission will approve the Alaska application. First of all, he says there isn't much information about ionospheric propagation at latitudes of around 60 degrees north with regard to how digital signals such as DRM would work as broadcasting services. So, this is pioneering, he says. Secondly, the Alaska population outside of Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau is sparse. Taking this to a global level, Messer says, if a country has half its population living within three cities, what about the other half? He criticized some Voice of America research in parts of the world like West Africa that has been used to downplay the importance of shortwave in favor of FM and the Internet. Messer asserts that often this research has not taken rural areas sufficiently into account, areas that still depend largely upon shortwave. Quote, without trying to minimize the value this has to Alaska, he says, this is transportable to other places in the United States. Just think about it. If I can use the phrase, the red states in the United States, a lot of them are sparsely populated. The Dakotas, Montana, up and down the Rocky Mountain area. Shortwave to United States. The final category of DRM on shortwave is traditional shortwave for long-distance skywave coverage, but aimed at domestic audiences. Messer says TCI International did some research showing that five transmitters would cover the United States with a DRM signal, quote, at power levels that are consistently lower than what you're used to, unquote. He said it remains to be seen if existing shortwave stations in the United States or other commercial concerns will show an interest in the possibility of domestic HF broadcasting. As for the United States government, quote, the IBB is prohibited from doing this, but I can tell you there is some interest in trying to help us out with some domestic broadcasting, unquote. He noted that the International Broadcasting Bureau is a DRM member. Messer realizes that the big challenge in the long term of these domestic shortwave DRM applications is that the Federal Communications Commission would have to change its rules to permit domestic broadcasting of digital signals from the U.S. to the U.S. In summary, for DRM on medium wave in the United States, Messer says, the technical capability is there. I think the market there depends on how well HD radio does in the medium wave band over time. For short wave, local community services, Alaska-type regional services, and long-range DRM services, the question is, are there markets, perhaps niche markets, in the United States for this kind of broadcasting? The kinds of things I'm talking about within the United States will require at least 1 to 2 to 3 years of testing. Quote, by that time, if there aren't consumer receivers ready, forget you heard this speech, unquote. Meanwhile, Messer points out that there are currently shortwave DRM transmissions to the United States from Canada, Bonaire, French Guiana, and other sites, and nobody can prevent some Mexican entrepreneur from broadcasting out of Chichua or something like that as long as it's coordinated with the HFCC. Now that you've heard that story, would you be interested in hearing DRM? or perhaps purchasing a DRM radio. Let us know on the musings. As a follow-up to the story that I just read, I'd just like to give you some additional information on DRM. DRM is the world's only non-proprietary global standard for the digitizing of shortwave, medium-wave, and long-wave broadcasting. Additionally, the DRM Consortium recently voted to begin the process of extending the DRM system into the broadcasting bands up to 120 MHz. Able to cover great distances and provide near FM quality audio using lower transmission powers and capable channel allocations, DRM is currently being adopted in markets worldwide to provide new and higher quality broadcasts for local, national, and international audiences. Over 20 broadcasters are already broadcasting using DRM across the globe, and they include the BBC World Service, Deutsche Welle, RTL Group, Radio Netherlands, and TDF. More information can be found at www.drm.org. So how can you receive DRM broadcasts? One option is the Sanjian DRM radio receiver, model MP40. The Sanjian DRM40's top panel features a rotatable AM bar antenna that can be removed. Wind Radio also makes a radio that can receive DRM broadcasts. In fact, Wind Radio's experimental equipment receives FM-quality DRM shortwave broadcasts over a distance of up to 10,000 miles. The distance from Radio Netherlands to Melbourne, Australia is approximately 10,289 miles or 16,558 kilometers. To receive DRM, one needs a quality HF receiver to start with. The Wind Radio WRG-303i, WRG-303e, WRG-313i, and WRG-313e HF receivers are eminently suitable for DRM thanks to their low phase noise, high sensitivity, and suitable bandwidth. However, good reception is also possible with general coverage receivers such as the Wind Radio WRG-305i, WRG-315i, and WRG-315e. In addition to the receiver, you also need a DRM demodulator or decoder. You need the integrated DRM demodulator decoder plugins specially developed for the Wind Radio HF receivers. The WRG303/G305 DRM decoder demodulator, as well as the WRG313 and G315 versions. And from digital, let's tune over to analog and a recent column in DX News Magazine, the magazine of the National Radio Club's printed side, on page 14, Target DX, DXing Smart with shared tips and information from National Radio Club members. This column is authored by Sean Axelrod of 30 Beacon Tree Bay, Winnipeg, Manitoba, R2N2X9. And Sean writes, this month we'll take a look at the Sunrise Skip, SRS, and Sunset Skip, SSS, targeting. Both SRS and SSS are a form of gray line DXing. Once again, I'll base my ideas and thoughts on my DX experiences here in Winnipeg, Manitoba, so please adjust for your location. Grayline DXing is like surfing a big wave that is going around the world. At any given time of the day, there are two gray lines on the face of this planet. One is a sunrise line, and the other is a sunset line. As these gray lines move across the world, they cause an enhancement for DXers. For this column, we'll primarily look at SRS and SSS for North America. However, don't forget the gray line enhancement can help with transatlantic as well as transpacific DX. You can download a program for your computer called GeoClock just by going to their website http://geoclock, that's spelled G-E-O-C-L-O-C-K, .home.att.net. Now, this program will show you the gray line as it moves around the world on 5-minute updates. Also of use is the sunrise sunset tables offered at the National Radio Club's Publication Center. These will give you a month-by-month view of where the sunrise and sunset is in North America. Based upon my DX experiences here in Winnipeg, Manitoba, sunset skip is a double-edged sword. Before my sunset, there is a better chance to receive targets to the east of me. As the sun moves, and it is or is just before sunset, causing the gray line to be on my location, there is an enhancement of signals to the east. I won't get too technical, but this has to do with how the D layer of the atmosphere works, but here it is quickly. During the daylight hours, the D layer of the ionosphere is ionized by radiation from the sun and effectively becomes an absorber of energy, that is, radio signals. The D layer prevents the long-distance signals that you may have targeted from being able to be bounced off higher layers and travel further. When the sun sets, the D layer loses its absorbing properties. At the same time, desired radio signals can bounce longer distances. To sum up, this D layer movement causes interesting but brief DX conditions. Many stations are still on full daytime power and are easier to hear before they power down for the night. They may also be on a more non-directional antenna pattern during the daytime hours, putting out more signal in my way. The other edge of the sword is as they approach sunset, they may change their pattern more to my location to protect other stations on the frequency. This can wipe out some other stations on the frequency. The stations may also be powering down, causing them to disappear once they change to a lower power. There is that in between the right time at gray line where stations are in a state of flux, both for power and for direction, that can provide you with a chance to grab a few targets. In the morning, SRS works a lot like SSS, but in the opposite direction. Here in Manitoba, we get an enhancement to the west as SRS gray line. There are many stations to the west of Winnipeg that are only heard at or just past sunrise skip. If I want to catch a new target, I often use SRS to listen for the western targets I have on my target sheet. Stations to the east are heard less often or are weaker at SRS, so the stations to the west are enhanced and come in better. The stations are heard further and further west as sunrise approaches and passes over Winnipeg. In the wintertime, it's not uncommon to DX the west for an hour or more after my local sunrise. Also, SRS is the only time of the day that I've gotten any trans-Pacific DX, so all those targets are SRS targets only. As stated above, stations have to adjust their powers and patterns at both sunrise and sunset if they are required to do so by their license. These times are basically set by the sunrise or sunset time of the middle of the month. As the month goes on, the sunset and sunrise times are a bit skewed. These last few days of the month can provide further enhancement for target chasing. This takes some getting used to, and I don't expect to get a bunch of new catches on your first couple of tries. This is a game of three P's. That is to say, patience, propagation conditions, and just being at the right place at the right time. Here is our very first target list from Cheryl Paskowitz of Wisconsin. 540 in Las Vegas, New Mexico, KNMX, when Milwaukee and Regina aren't audible. 560 in Owen Sound, Ontario. CFOS when WIND is not audible. 660 in Window Rock, Arizona, KTNN, when WFAN is not audible. 690 in New Orleans or Jacksonville, when Canada isn't in. 710 in Niagara Falls, Ontario, CJRN, when WOR isn't dominant. 810 in McGee, Mississippi, WSJC instead of WGY from Schenectady. And 940 from Macon, Georgia, WMAC instead of Canada. Cheryl has heard all of these at one time or another, but wishes she could hear Maine on 1160 instead of Chicago. She can't even hear KSL anymore, by the way. Anyone have a tip for Cheryl on getting Maine from her location in Wisconsin? As the editor, I hope to see more listings in the future so we can grow the column into a useful tool for all readers. The list would be a way to let fellow DXers know that if they are hearing a certain station, they could be trying for others in that area of the country. Or, as per Cheryl's list above, if you are not hearing certain stations, there are other stations to be heard on that frequency. My personal target sheet is at http://www.angelfire.com/mb/amandx/targetsheet.xls. 73s at this time from Sean. Remember, on a clear day, you can hear forever. Well, that's our DX Audio service for this month. Again, remember, your tapes are not due until the end of the month. And we'll see you after the convention. 73 and good DX.